Today we are going to conclude the 31st chapter of Tanya. This is a chapter that's all about joy, but perhaps more specifically, more pointedly, it's about the challenges of finding joy and the ability to overcome the things that get in our way nonetheless. So let's just do a quick recap as we come in here now for the close. If you look at the Tanya, so Perek Lamed Aleph, we're now finally coming to its close. The bottom of the original number, page 80, in the Hebrew. Okay. So, a recap. We explained earlier that when a person will find a sense of bitterness on the fact that his material life is so abominable and so distant from Hashem, and in coming to this realization, he or she awakens a sense of mercy and rachmanis on the neshama that's stuck in this bodily reality. So this will not cause a person to become despondent and depressed, but rather it will incite and awaken a desire for the neshama to release itself, to free itself, and to come closer to Hashem, to be absorbed into, so to speak, the light of God. And therefore, a person's whole desire will be to leave all the narishkeit behind and to elevate themselves and live what life's really all about. And that'll be fulfilled through the study of Torah and the performance of mitzvahs. Now, once we came to this understanding, we revisited the concept of teshuva, which is rooted in a pasuk in Koheles, in the 12th chapter of Ecclesiastes, where Shlomo HaMelech uses the terminology Haruach Toshuv El Ha'elekim. The spirit shall return to God from whence it comes. Now, the spirit shall return to God means that the spirit has been distanced, but it yearns to recapture its former majesty and glory. It's not about sins. Tshuva is really, as we spoke about several weeks ago, a way of life. And this is the tshuva, this is the yearning that the neshama feels to come back to its source. Now, obviously, when you make bigger mistakes and you make things even darker than they had to be, the yearning will be greater, obviously. Obviously, when the neshama is even further than it had to be, because just by dint of the fact that it is in this world, it's already distant from Hashem, so it yearns to return. But if you made that situation darker or more distant by engaging in sinful behavior and rebelling against Hashem, obviously the neshama is even further away, and you need the ruach toshuv, you need the return even more profoundly. The point, however, is that tshuva is not simply the answer to sins. Tshuva is a sense of yearning that should accompany a person through life. And a person should always be aspiring. Aspiration is one of the major ingredients in living a life which is beyond the here and now, instead of getting just stuck in the immediate situation, to be able to see the big picture, to be able to know what this is all about. Otherwise, we tend to get bogged down and the engine gets clogged because we just focus on here and now and can't see past that. Interestingly, the notion of Gehenim comes from Gai Hinom. Gai Hinom was this terrible, awful valley in Yerushalayim where people slaughtered their children and burned them for idols. And amazingly, it's right in the busy city of Jerusalem today, and nobody lives there. It's just this empty, desolate valley. It's actually unbelievable. People claim they believe in nothing. They claim to be atheists, but no developer wants to go to that area. And
it's
nobody.
One thing there, Mamila Mall.
Even Mamila Mall is not really in Gai Hinom. The real Gai Hinom, nothing is there. So there's this notion that Gai Hinom is also connected to the terminology of Hine Hinom, which means I'm only stuck in here. To live only in the present, to live with no hope, to live with no aspiration, is a hellish kind of life. That's a life that's devoid of any future. It's a life that's devoid of any hope or optimism. So the neshama has to be yearning. It has to live with this hope and this optimism. And even in times when you're feeling down, and even in times when things aren't great, nonetheless, the neshama is able to elevate itself with this refocusing. And we explain further that when a person is actually studying Torah, and we are now, and when a person is actually engaged in a mitzvah, and the study of Torah is even also a mitzvah, that at that time, the neshama is actually set free. So when we're sitting and studying Torah, our neshama is set free for a little while, for the time being. And as such, this morning's activity shouldn't make us really happy. Because the whole problem was we're getting bogged down in the things that disabled the neshama. But now the neshama is set free. And the Alter Rebbe now goes on to bring the flag home. And he says, he will explain to us how not only out of the current situation should we also, despite it all, find joy, but in fact, that should be the source of our joy. The fact that the neshama is shackled and the fact that the neshama can find freedom is in and of itself the greatest sense of joy and the greatest sense of fulfillment. As the Alter Rebbe continues now, V'lihiyeis b'chinas tshuva zu, since this tshuva is b'yeser se'es, v'yeser oz, it's with more intensity, it's with more strength, because it comes me'umka deliba, it comes from a very deep place in the heart. So v'gam simchas ha'nefesh tia b'heitesefes oira v'simcha. So the joy of the soul should also be more intense. The joy of the soul should also be with greater strength. What does this mean? What does it mean that the tshuva of learning Torah and doing mitzvahs is b'yeser se'es v'yeser oz, that it's with greater strength, a greater fervor, because it becomes me'umka deli, because it's coming from a deep place now. What does that mean? It means that by nature, the things that are harder for us to get and the things that we want even more, they kind of, there's a corollary. It's almost like supply and demand. The things that cost a lot of money are very rare, hard to come by, they cost more. There's a greater demand, people want them more. The thing that comes easily, nobody stops to look at. The thing that comes with a challenge, we really want that. And when you want it with a greater sense of fervor, because it's not so easy to get it. So this sense of yearning then, which comes out of the neshama's distance from Hashem, out of the fact that it's shackled, out of the fact that the neshama is stuck in a situation which it finds absolutely impossible. It's an impossible situation for the neshama. It's something that can only bring the neshama a sense of despondency. So when the neshama is trying to escape from that, it does so with much greater fervor, with much greater intensity. And because it does so with much greater intensity, then the joy should also be greater. And now the Alter Rebbe says, so how is it possible to come to this level of tshuva when in fact a person may not feel that greater inspiration or that greater motivation? So the Alter Rebbe says, this has a lot to do with you. It has to do with your attitude. It has to do with the way you choose to look at things. Whether you contemplate, whether you take to heart, what should you take to heart and contemplate? Kasha yoshev alibe das v'tvuna l'nachame. When a person takes knowledge, so to speak, to heart, and he takes understanding to find comfort, mi'itzvoinoi v'yigoinoi, from his despondency and sadness. Okay, so this is like very poetic. He's yoshev alibe, he takes to heart. Takes to heart means that it cannot simply be a cerebral concept. It can't just be something intellectual. Because if it's something intellectual, it has nothing to do with me. There's a famous story. I told it to you many times. But then again, the Rebbe repeated it many times also. And the story is about a person, a business person, who was running a very, very large firm and had run into difficulties. And he had a top accounting firm that was going over everything. And then they were destined to give him a report. And the day arrived, and they came in. And you know, the imagery of the 1920s or turn of the last century. Person comes in to the CEO's office with a report on a silver platter. And they place the report down. And the accountant starts going over all the numbers, crunching all the numbers. Remember, there's no computers those days. No. Everything had to be done by hand. And when they finished the whole calculation, it became apparent that the company was headed for bankruptcy. There was no way to save the company. The debt was far too overwhelming, and the cost of manufacturing would simply not be able to generate the profit. It couldn't work. The CEO, or the owner of the company, promptly fainted. But the accountant, he was just sitting there. And the question was, what's the difference between these two people? Both very smart, both very capable. Both now are aware of the numbers. One delivered the news, one fainted. What's the difference? It's his company. He took this to heart. For the other guy, it was a job. His job was to come in, figure out what was going on in the company, here's the news, now I get paid. Or maybe not. But even so, that's not the end of his life. So he wasted a few weeks. Here we're talking about a situation where it's his livelihood. This is what he invested his whole life into, and it's gone. That means to take to heart. So they used to say, that means we say in the month of Elul, it's time of tshuva, you make a cheshbon ha-nefesh. So the Chassidim used to say, abalabatash ha-cheshbon. You have to make a cheshbon that you take responsibility. It's your company. Some people say, oh, make a cheshbon, things are not good. Well, it's God's fault. God put me in the circumstances. I can't be bothered. What do you want from me? But Hashem does want from us. He put you in the circumstances, he also put you in the driver's seat. He didn't put us in the driver's seat as which highway we have to take. He didn't tell us how the highway is going to look, but he did put us in the driver's seat to navigate the obstacles. We have to make those choices. And those choices have to be made, taken to heart. And when a person takes that to heart, and he takes these ideas as comfort, you can't get comforted by something which is out there. Comfort is when this idea relates to me. This idea is close to me. I can find comfort in this idea. So when a person does so, he is able, lemer keniske le'el, to say, as we mentioned earlier, hey Nemes, yes, it's true, without any doubt, I am indeed very far from Hashem, and I'm this sniveling little arrogant, endlessly demanding creature. I just think about myself all day. All I want is me, 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 and then some more me. Like I told you the story with Alter Rebbe's Chassid last week. Like, Tilun Chassidus, all he thought about was me. And he said, in the conclusion of his question, how would God give me Gan Eden? Because I do so many good things. And now I learn Chassidus. I also think about me. I think, how does God have any nachas from me? Right? So a person thinks about all these things, and he's aware, he's honest with himself. Make a balabatash cheshbon. So, but what does he say to himself? He doesn't exonerate himself from responsibility. But he says, I didn't create the circumstances. I can't get down because of circumstances. I can only take responsibility for how I respond to circumstances. I didn't create myself. And by extension, that means we didn't create our situation. Who created that? Where does that come from? That's not something we chose. So when it's something that we're responsible for, that's the result of our choices. And then ultimately we can't blame that on anybody else. Can't say, ani lo yasisi. I didn't make this decision. It was hashgacha pratas, I should eat the pork. Yeah, no, it doesn't work like that. You chose to eat it, you have to deal with it. You can't just blame bad choices on hashgacha pratas. What you could say is, I didn't ask to have such a lowly nefesh abahamas. I didn't ask to be tormented with these kind of lusts and desires. I didn't ask for this, so I am. I didn't ask for this kind of arrogance. I didn't ask for this kind of slothfulness. I didn't ask for this kind of anger. I didn't ask for any of these things. This is the personality God gave me. So I can't get down about that personality. However, what I could do is understand that I'm responsible for the choices I make with it. And that's you know, the nature Hashem gave us cannot bring us down. The only thing that we can ultimately really feel sad and bad about is the choices we make. V'loma asa Hashem kazeis. And then you have to ask yourself the question, so why did God do this? So God did it. What did he do that for? L'hoidit chelik me'edi yizbarach, to take a piece of himself, so to speak, of God's light, ha'memala v'sevev kol almin, which sustain all worlds, both individually and atmospherically, v'koile kamei kaloch hashiv, and everything really has no value whatsoever in comparison with the glory and greatness of God. V'hil bishoy, and he enclothed it b'mashche d'chivya, in the proverbial snake skin, which we spoke about last week at length, the tipa srucha, and literally in a drop of rotten human fluid, which is how we were created. That's where we came from. We don't have such impressive beginnings, very humble beginnings. So the neshama comes from the highest of sources and is created through the lowest of forms, lowest form of biology, and we're stuck in this lowly body, and I didn't choose that. God chose that. Why did God choose that? Why did God decide to put the neshama down in this situation? And then the neshama has to contend with an animal that's not interested in any of the things the neshama wants. Ein ze ki im yirida zohi tzedech aliyah. I must know that this descent is for the purpose of an appropriate ascent. L'ha'aleis la'ashem kol nefesh achayunas shabahamis. The point is that this animal could never serve God. It's an animal. But now that I'm stuck with this animal, now that we're in bed together, so to speak, neshama and guf, body and soul. So we're stuck. Now that we're stuck together, so kol nefesh achiyunis habahamis shemeklipas negev v'cholav usha, this whole animal soul, with all of its heaviness and all of its extraneous reality and all of its garments. The thought, speech, and deed that it contains and includes. All of this can now be elevated. All of this can now be redirected and used for a holy and a sacred purpose. So what happens if a person has desires which are unhealthy or inappropriate? What do you do with those desires? You sublimate them. There was a chassid of the Alter Rebbe who said that he became a beinoni, the highest level that ordinary people can reach, out of gaiva. Gaiva. Gaiva is arrogance, conceit. So the gaiva. Gaiva is a midah meguna. It's a terrible thing. Arrogance is something which distances us from Hashem and disables our success. So he said, what do you mean? How could gaiva, which is so bad, make you become so good? And he said, simple. Every time the Yetzirah came to me and tried to nudge me in the direction of a sin, I said, you got to be kidding. Me? A chassid of the Alter Rebbe? I should lower myself? It's beneath my dignity. I'm sorry. Out of the question.
There it goes.
I had an uncle, Olav Hashalom. His name was Rabbi Leibel Kaplan. He's a very, very special person. Very brilliant, very exalted kind of soul. Amazing personality. Anyway, he loved to eat. That was one of his big challenges. He's a portly fellow and he liked to eat. And he would come home from yeshiva as a boy, 15-year-old boy. He would go straight to the stove where his mother was making dinner, and he would lift the lids to see what was in the pots. And sometimes, if he liked something, he would like fish it out of the pot quickly, you know. And he felt very bad about this. This is what bothered a 15-year-old boy. It bothered him so much. He felt so bad. He couldn't control himself. So he was in yechidus. He was in a private audience with the Rebbe for his 15th birthday, and he told the Rebbe about this problem, and he asked the Rebbe for a solution. So the Rebbe said to him, you should imagine to yourself that you're a very prominent rabbi and a very important person that's looked up to by multitudes. And it's just beneath your dignity. Because of who you are, you're such an important person now. A prominent person doesn't sit and pull things out of a pot. You don't lift things. And that's what enabled him to break his taiva, and he stopped doing that, right? Now the truth is he became exactly what the Rebbe said he would become, and then some. But the point also is that the Rebbe took something natural, was easy, for a 15-year-old boy to understand. Every one of us has images of grandeur. We think that we're important. We all think we're important. We are really important in Hashem's eyes on some level, but not everybody's that important in the scheme of things in a material, literal sense. And the Rebbe enabled a child to take something which came easily and naturally and use that to redirect him. So you come at a child with a sledgehammer and things which he's not capable of understanding or appreciating, you lose the kid. Rebbe didn't yell at him, he was screaming at him. Rebbe elevated him. He elevated him, and he took the natural tendency of that which could have been unhealthy, because he was a very bright boy, he's probably the smartest kid in his class, and he could have been arrogant about it. And the Rebbe helped him use that to break his taiva, to break his desire, his craving for food. But this is just but one example of the idea that each and every one of us has the ability to use these natural inclinations for a holy purpose. So the person who likes to be in charge should take charge of the homeless. I mean it literally and figuratively. People who are in need. You like to be in charge? Great. Take responsibility. You like to be the one who calls the shots? Okay. Then find people who desperately need somebody to call their shots and call the shots for them. And when you did that, when you decided, you made the choice to redirect natural ability, things which you didn't choose. We didn't choose our personalities. But we can choose how we deal with our personality. What we do with the gifts and the burdens that Hashem gave us. And when that's done, that's called a yirida l'tzeirach aliyah. Then the neshama got stuck in a circumstance which it said, why? And the answer is, because. Because now this can be utilized for a holy purpose. And that happens al yedei yislab shusan b'maisa dibir machshava sateira. You take the very same speech, you take the very same thought, you take the very same actions, and you harness them and use them for something positive. And then amazing things happen. So now the body becomes an envelope, a convention through which wonderful things are taking place. The very same things which you saw as your greatest challenge actually become your greatest strength. That's called sublimation. That's the choice we make. Having those abilities or disabilities was not a choice. What we do with them, that's in our hands. And since, in the end, the Torah studied, the mitzvahs performed, the Yiddishkeit engaged in, can only happen through the body and its realities, so now it found purpose. Now it's, so to speak, redeemed. Ukamoshi is bar lekaman, like the Alter Rebbe will explain later in chapters 35, 36, and 37, inyan haloa zubarichas. He'll talk about this elevation in great detail. How exactly that works. How do we elevate? How do we transform things? Eich shehi tachlis b'riyas ha'ilam. The Alter Rebbe will explain to us how that is ultimately the purpose of creation itself. It's not a detail. It is the primary function, the focus. That's why the world is created. And so it turns out when a person is in this reality, which he finds sadness and despondency in, he says, it's so far from my neshama, it turns out that that's exactly why the neshama was here. To use those in a holy purpose. V'im kein, and if so, eifa izois esa, a person should say to himself, this indeed I will do. This is what it's about. V'zois tiyya kol magmasi kol yimecheldi. This will be my desire, my aspiration. All the days when I have koyach, you know, at a certain point we run out of koyach. At a certain point, we're not really able to contend. The body just takes over when people get nebuch old and they lose their minds and lose their ability. Then you really can't function anymore. But up until that point, you do have koyach. You know, there's this idea that you do tshuva before you die. That, you know, you go straight to Ganei, you do tshuva. And when I was younger, I used to think, so like, why can't people use it as a crutch? Do whatever you want, you do tshuva. Right? And the older I got, the more I realized it doesn't go that way. If you didn't do tshuva when it was hard, you're not going to do tshuva when it's supposed to be easy. It just doesn't work. When I was a little boy, we lived in Philadelphia, and there was a group of like Russian immigrants who had just come out. It's like the early 1980s. And these people, they didn't really have a job. They couldn't get a job anymore. They were in a different reality, like displaced. But they figured out that they could take a bus from Philadelphia to Atlantic City. The casino would take you for free, and they would give you actually $10 to spend in the casino. So a lot of these elder people would get up in the morning, they would daven in Shul, they would daven Shachris in the Minyan, the Lubavitch Center, they would get on the bus, they would travel to Atlantic City, they would sit on the boardwalk all day, and at night they would cash in the chips, and they would have $10. They got paid $10 to go look at the ocean. It was like an Eden for them. It was beautiful. They figured it out. They figured out how to beat the system. So I remember saying something to my father. I was still like 10 years old, 11 years old. Said something like, so I guess this is like, even if people don't come to show when they're younger, I guess eventually, you know, this is where it all ends up. And my father said, listen, these people are a big, big exception. He says, for the most part, people who don't come to show when they're young don't come to show when they're older either. So you don't suddenly get this awakening. It doesn't work that way. When I retire, then I'll have time. People retire, they never have time. Now I'm busy on the golf course. Now I'm busy with the doctor. People always find an excuse. It's the way it is. So we have to use the koyach when we have the koyach and the wherewithal when we have it to make the decision to do the right thing. And that's supposed to be our aspiration all along. Not someday when I have time. All along, that has to be my aspiration. Obviously, circumstances happen. We do the best that we could. But as long as that remains our constant aspiration to free ourselves from the shackles of the bodily reality and to harness and sublimate it for a godly and a holy purpose, so then this is what life's about. And how do we know this is what life's about? Because David HaMelech said so. King David, in his inimitable form of poetry, his prose, he said, like it says in the 20th chapter of Tehillim, it says, Eilecha Hashem nafshi esa, to you, God, my soul yearns. I lift my soul up to you. That's what this is about. Lifting your soul up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And as long as a person lifts his soul up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and as long as a person is trying, so to speak, to do what's right, to do what's good, then it's all good. And then you find meaning, mission, and purpose in the difficulties and challenges of everyday life. There's a beautiful mashal that the Alter Rebbe uses a number of times in Tanya. So I think originally a Baal Shem Tov mashal, and it's about this royal prince who is spirited out of the palace and sent to a distant land, and there the king wants him to become a mensch. Doesn't want him to be a rich kid with a silver spoon in his mouth. He wants him to live amongst the ordinary population to understand the trials and tribulations that they deal with. And the rich kid is in the school of hard knocks. The little prince has difficulty. And there's many, many mashalim, many, many details that kind of flow out of this central narrative. But one of the mashalim, which is given, is that at some point, when the prince has finished lamenting his situation, where he was sleeping on a beautiful down quilts, and he had people waiting on him, and life was beautiful in the palace, and here he is sleeping in a haystack, surrounded by the coarsest and simplest of people who never even heard of the king, and they didn't even know, they didn't know to respect him, that he's the son of the king. What son of the king? Who's the king? Well, this, of course, a mashal of us. Melech Malchim Lachim sends his son, us, down to planet Earth. And how are we in this world? Mocked and denigrated by everybody. And nobody has respect for the king. Nobody says, we never saw the king. Who is the king? So what's our job? What's the prince realizes at some point that his job is to make these people aware of the king. He was actually sent on a mission to transform this little corner of his father's kingdom into a place of love and loyalty for the king, for the crown, instead of ignorance. So he starts to do that. And the prince finds joy in the small battles, in the hearts and minds that he captures and changes. And he realizes that's why he's here. That's the purpose of his being here. So he finds joy in that. And even though he loved to be close to his parents and loved to be in the palace, and that would be really nice, but he realizes that he can find a sense of satisfaction far, far away from the palace, because ultimately he's doing what his father the king wants. So this is the mashal for us. We're sent far, far away from the palace. The neshama is yearning, crying, unhappy, and at some point you pull yourself up by your bootstraps and say, okay, what do you do about it? What do you do about it? You can make a difference. You know, the Rambam says that the mitzvah of avas Hashem, of loving Hashem, means that you want others to love Hashem too. That's the biblical mitzvah. Of loving Hashem means to reach out to others. It says, because if you love somebody, you want everybody to love that person. Somebody loves their spouse or their children, they want their spouse or children to be beloved in other people's eyes too. It's impossible that you should love Hashem for real and not care about how people speak about Hashem. So then Avraham Avinu loved Hashem. What did he do? He spoke to people about God all the time. He tried to introduce the presence of God into the atmosphere, make it part of everyday life. And this is what we do on a personal level with our own animal, and then in a broader sense with the world that we're living in. So by trying to convey this message and by trying to inspire others to get with the program and understand and appreciate what you know and appreciate, what happens is you find joy in that. And that's the Elecha Hashem Nafshi Esa. That's David HaMelech saying, I lift my soul up to you. What does this mean? How do you lift your soul up? You climb a mountain? Some people think so. You play music? No. L'kasher machshavtei v'diburi u'machshavtei b'diburi yizbarech. To connect my mind and my communication with God's mind and communication, so to speak. What's God's mind and communication? God's mind and communication, v'hein hin gufi halachas, haruchas lefaneinu. These are the halachas that are arranged before us. That's, so to speak, God's mind. So Reuven said A, and Shimon said B, and now they're in a fight and they're killing each other. So God says the halacha should be such and such. That's God's will. Now you figured out how God looks at it. When you look at it the way the Torah looks at it, you're looking at how God looks at it. When you understand it the way the Torah understands it, that's the way Hashem understands it. So you have discovered now the mind of Hashem, if you will. And the same is true with the concept of God's speech. V'chein b'maisa mitzvahs. And the same thing is also true with the actions of mitzvahs. This is what Hashem wants in this world. So when you do that, that's how you lift your soul up to Hashem. That's why the Torah is referred to in the 19th Psalm as Meshivas Nofesh. It's restorative of soul. Pirush, not restorative, but it's restoration of soul, in as in it restores the soul, the Mekoyed of Esharsha. It's through the Torah, the superhighway of Torah, that the soul can travel back to its source. And on this, we say right away in the very next verse, this is verse 8 of Psalm 19. What do we say in verse 9? The next thing we say is Pekudei Hashem Yisharim. God's instructions are upright. Mesamchei Lev. They bring us joy, which is the point of this chapter of Tanya. So if I'm able to discover God and know God and relate to God and actualize God's will, then in that I can find joy. And that, my dear friends, is how we can find joy despite the bodily reality and the many, many challenges that it provides for us. We can find joy. And the joy is found in the knowledge that Hashem loves us and gives us the ability to elevate this world. And through being in this world, in this situation, the most amazing things can happen that could never happen in heaven. And the neshama only has this opportunity when it's right here in Elam Haza Hagashmi. And with this joy, we're able to serve Hashem properly. And with that, we conclude Tanya 31. The next chapter of Tanya is a very, very interesting chapter because it kind of follows and builds, obviously, on everything we learned up until this point, but it's also a standalone. Perek Lev, this 32nd chapter of Tanya, which is the heart of Tanya, speaks about the mitzvah of Ahavat Yisrael. Alter Rebbe says, by the way, once we've come to understand all these things, let me tell you a little secret. Here's how you can actually experience and fulfill the mitzvah of Ahavat Yisrael, which on the surface seems wholly impossible. To be continued.